The Lord be with you.
And with your spirit.
A reading from the Holy Gospel according to John.
Glory to you, Lord.
Jesus said, "I am the good shepherd. A good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. A hired man who is not a shepherd and whose sheep are not his own sees a wolf coming and leaves the sheep and runs away, and the wolf catches and scatters them. This is because he works for pay and has no concern for the sheep. I am the good shepherd, and I know mine, and mine know me, just as the Father knows me, and I know the Father, and I will lay down my life for the sheep. I have other sheep that do not belong to this fold. These also I must lead, and they will hear my voice, and there will be one flock, one shepherd. This is why the Father loves me, because I lay down my life in order to take it up again. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down on my own. I have power to lay it down and power to take it up again. This command I have received from my Father." The Gospel of the Lord. Okay, I have to start with this admission. I think whenever I'm, say, confronted with having to preach out of the Gospel of John, I get at least mildly exasperated. If that's a thing, to be mildly exasperated, it's like, okay, it's so dense, right? It's so packed full of meaning, and so much of it I feel as though is like two words away from us, right? Like if I could just say those two words, then we could get that meaning. And the problem is, of course, it's two words times however many, right? And it's like, okay, so it's one of those gospel passages, like almost every gospel passage that we get from the Gospel of John. And it's like there's the possibility of saying nothing at all and the possibility of saying way too much. And you know which side I end up on all the time, right? So I'm trying to, again, make my way right down the middle. But anyway. Just, I like to say before we begin, you know, because that's my clearing my throat, so you have something to pray for, like during the homily, like, okay, so please let him have a beginning, a middle, and the end, you know, like it doesn't have to be quite so tortured an experience. So I've been struggling with this passage all weekend. I think I have something to offer in terms of the frame, the outer frame of the thing that shapes our experience of what's going on here. And I'd say that frame is Israel, okay? Because when we see Jesus using language of the good shepherd or shepherd at all, and we know that he uses that language throughout the scriptures, and we see here him applying that directly to himself, we might think, okay, well, yeah, this is just, you know, a nice agrarian image. And for the people of Jesus' day, who are more familiar with farms and lands and the rest, yeah, this perhaps it would have struck a chord. And if you were preaching today, probably use a different image. And I'd say, no, I really don't think so. Because what he's doing is picking up on the fact that Israel's Messiah is to be the shepherd. And that connection is at least as old as King David, right? Who was a shepherd in his father's field, the youngest, the ruddy boy, right, come in, the one who no one thought could be king, right, who didn't have the strength or the wherewithal to commend him, but it's him, it's David, and then it's Jesus in David's line. So when we see language of shepherd and sheep, shepherd and flock, we really should be thinking about Israel's anointed king and the people of Israel. And here in this context as well, we could start throwing in things like, okay, this is Israel's God who is pledged to be their shepherd, and Israel as a people who need leading and guiding, who need nourishing and sustaining, who need, in fact, to be renewed as a people. And that's the thrust of this passage. Okay, so we have to go back, we have to put it in the context of salvation history, right? Just our chapter-by-chapter kind of blow-for-blow account of what God is doing in the world and what he anticipates having happen in us and through us and then after. So here we see, right, creation, God makes creation to be good. And man being created, in fact, very good, in order to, say, hold the two spheres of God's creation together, heaven and earth. He lives at the overlap, right? He lives at the interlock of heaven and earth in order to bring earth to heaven and heaven to earth. Man there falls. Okay, the fall. What is the fall? The fall, I mean, the catechism will say, is man losing trust of God in his heart. Okay, and losing trust of God in his heart, what does he do? It's not as though he, you know, falls down. He's lying in a puddle of tears and, you know, this great dramatic scene. It's not as though it's like this woe is me type of reality. What happens when man falls is he's falling short of who God intends him to be. So he's falling short of worship and service. Right? He's falling short of worship, but he continues to worship. So man, it's not as though we say, okay, I'm not going to worship anything. It's not possible for us. It's not the way we're created. We always worship something. Okay, so and if we don't worship the true and living God, we worship some idol or some counterfeit God. And that's what happens with humans. They fall short of worshiping God. They worship something else. Okay? And that act of idolatry then brings all manner of injustice into the world. Because we're not tapping into the source of our strength, the source of our life, because we're not tapping into the true and living God, we're tapping into something else, we're bringing the fruit of that relationship into existence in the world. We're bringing that life to bear in the world. Right, so we look at the fact that the world is wound up on pursuits of power, pleasure, popularity, and the rest. We better believe that by making any one of those vain pursuits our priority, we change not only our hearts, we also change our lives, and we also change the world. And it's only then by tapping back into the God who is an eternal exchange of glorifying love that we can live to his plan. Anyway, okay, this is it, right? Creation, the fall. God summons Israel to be that people who would give him fitting praise. He calls them to be holy, that they would live the relationship with them that he always wanted to live, and to be a people who not only are, say, just in themselves, like they were just, say, that they're put to rights in themselves, but they will be about the work of putting to rights the world. They will be vehicles of his justice, his creative, exuberant justice to the whole world. What happens when Israel falls short of that? Okay, so again, now Jesus walks into, this is the gospel passage. Jesus walks into that scene where Israel has been called by God to be his remedy for idolatry and injustice. He walks into that scene. And what does he say? He says, I am the good shepherd. What does it mean? He's walk into that scene and say, I am the good shepherd. Say, they know themselves to be the flock, as it were, Israel, to be the flock. He says, I'm the good shepherd. I am the one who has come to lead. I've come to defend you, protect you, the rest. I've come to give you pasture. I've come to, right, give you direction and the rest. And lead this project on at the head. So he takes his place as the head of the people here, by calling himself the shepherd. He is the king, the shepherd, in the line of David. And he's come then to bring Israel back on track, right? To get them back on track so as to bring that getting back on track power to the entire world. So this is what he says. Now, this is, by the way, the image is Jesus and his people. It's God and his people. And I want you to reflect, really, not always sure how to stir it up in you, but I'd like you to reflect on what is the relationship between God and his people? You know, what is your relationship with God? How do you think about God? How do you imagine him to be? How do you encounter him? And what is your experience of God? What images of him do you have and that you call to mind? As you pray, as you meditate, as you think about those things, what I'd offer is that really one of the primary images that we receive of God is right here in this gospel passage. Right? It's Jesus as the good shepherd. So like take the philosophical way for a second, right? And say, okay, well, we know that God is, as he's revealed himself to be, that's theology, of course, revealed himself to be, an eternal exchange of glorifying love. See it in the scriptures. Yeah, this is how he's revealed himself to be. And you think, okay, well, what does that mean? It means that God is totally satisfied in himself. He's not self-satisfied, okay, I understand the different connotation. He is totally satisfied in himself. He has total satisfaction in interpersonal relationship. The thing that you desperately want more than anything else, he has by rights. He has because he is in himself an eternal exchange of glorifying love. So, my friends, he has no need of anything. He has no need of anything. Okay, so what does that mean? It means that we have to take off the table from the beginning the idea that God creates us so that he can get something out of us. He already has everything. Doesn't need it. He doesn't, properly speaking, doesn't need you to do anything. Right? He didn't create in order to get something. He has everything. He created in order to give something. And that giving is his own blessed life, which again is from the first paragraph of the Catechism of the Catholic Church. It's a pretty good read, just in case you want to pick up some reading for yourself at some point. Okay, so God creates in order to give. Is this your image of God? I'm going to say no for a lot of us. It's not. It's not. We would say your default image of God. Is that your default image of God? Do you live in the, you know, overabundant joy of the fact that God has created you to give himself to you? Or do you still think of him as an angry school teacher? You know, no offense to our teachers, you know, but he's there to punish me. He's there to hold me accountable. He's there to whatever, okay? Because if we don't grasp that, at least in the beginnings of those ruminations, then we're not going to, it's Jesus as the good shepherd. Right, because it's not, think about it, it's so crazy. It's so crazy, right? God is creating you, not to get something from you. Okay, so already he's like, we don't understand this, because all of our experience is that things exist so that we get something out of them, or other relationships we have with people, they want to get something out of us, whatever. So God is creating us to give something, and it's not enough. He gives himself to us, we rebel against him, he sets plans in process to bring it back online. And part of the plan is that he's going to come as shepherd of the sheep and go out to meet the danger that the flock is facing and die in the battle. That's God. Do we have that image of God? How our prayer would change if we did. How our life would change if we had that image of God. And he's the God who is willing to die for us. And he's willing to die for us because we are his sheep. And he loves us. I mean, this is the nature of the call. We're all gathered into the one flock of Christ. We've heard the call. We're heeding the call to be in his flock. Yeah? Okay, so let me push back into the picture frame, okay? Because we get this. Okay, Jesus is calling. It's ours to hear and heed the call. In fact, if we see prior to this in the gospel, what causes this dialogue? What causes this exhortation on the part of Jesus, or the revelation that he is the good shepherd? It's that he heals the man born blind. He heals the man born blind. So he's about the work of renewing the human project so as to bring restoration to all of creation. And he has to answer for the accusations that come his way as a result of the fact that he's performing healing and renewing works. We don't need that, right? We don't need the reference, because look at the Acts of the Apostles. In the Acts of the Apostles, which we had in the first reading, right, we see Peter giving account of how the crippled man was healed. He said, if we're talking about the means by which this man was healed. Oh, did he say healed? What did he say? Do you remember? Did he say healed? He says saved. He said saved. No, you know why it's important though, right? Because we use that language for other things and we don't realize what we're doing. Yeah, he said, Peter says, after he's healed the crippled man, he said, salvation is through Jesus alone. But what did he say? He said, that man has been saved. It's been saved through Jesus alone. That's how salvation comes about. So we sometimes do that kind of religion of delayed gratification thing. We say, you know, well, we're saved, but that means we go to heaven when we die. And that renders everything else kind of immaterial. It's just not that important. That's not what happens in the story at all. Right? They don't walk past the man and the man's going, you know, I need some help here. And they say, okay, you get to go to heaven when you die and keep walking. That's not right. It's not what happens. What happens is that I need some help. And they say, rise. Right? Receive the risen life of Jesus and be about the work of God in the world. Right? Be a renewed human being, giving your life entirely to God in praise and pouring yourself out in his service. That's what it means to be a renewed human being. So get up and let's go. Right? And that's what happens. And that, my friends, is salvation. That is salvation. So where are we in terms of our being in the flock of the true and good shepherd? Are we also recipients of the saving work of God? Yes, we are. And the saving work of God is to have us live as renewed image bearers of God. The task is so significant, right? It bears repeating. We're renewed. We have to be renewed image bearers of God. We get to be renewed image bearers of God because Jesus has gone out to defend the flock. And he's died under the weight of what oppresses and opposes us in order to rise from the dead and breathe back into us, communicate to us, his life that is stronger than death so that we could live to the vocation, right, that God has issued to us, to live as conduits of his love, bringing the spheres of heaven and earth together, living as, say, his intercessors and his creatures who can sum up creation's praise and give God the glory in everything, and then pour ourselves out in his service, bringing order back to his creation in the power of self-giving love. You might notice in my recitation of the passage today, right? When we get to the end, we see, right, Jesus, no one takes his life from him. I lay it down on my own. I have power to lay it down. I have power to take it up again. That power is the power of self-giving love. This is the power of Jesus' entire life. And he's communicating himself to us today that we might have the power of self-giving love as well. And that we can bring good order back to his good creation by living in and living out of the power of self-giving love. Okay, I'm just going to make one little last point. I'm going to try to anyway. I've been thinking about it all morning. It hasn't come out of my mouth, so you never know as happens. Okay. The shepherd becomes the lamb so that the lamb or the lambs can themselves become shepherds. Okay, we're going to go through this in a minute, right? By the end of what we're doing here, offering our lives in praise of God through and with and in Christ Jesus, I'm going to say, behold the Lamb of God. The shepherd becomes the lamb so that the sheep can become shepherds. But we become shepherds when we live out of the power of self-giving love, when we live out of the power of heaven, live out of the power of God's own life of love, then we become shepherds. And the voice that we will issue to the world is not any longer our own voice. It's the voice of the Good Shepherd. It's the voice of Jesus himself, calling all to join the one flock of God.